Every day, companies you've never heard of are making millions off your personal data. Your name, address, phone number, even details about your family are pulled from public records on the internet, then sold without your consent. There's an entire marketplace built on your privacy, and most people have no idea it exists. Aura fights back. Aura removes your personal data from broker sites and keeps it off. Aura also alerts you fast if your information shows up in a breach or on the dark web. But Aura is more than just a data broker removal system. It's a full digital security suite that protects every part of your online life. Aura gives you a VPN to stay private, antivirus to block threats, a password manager for safer logins, and spam call protection to shut down scammers. Aura scans the dark web for your most sensitive information and notifies you instantly if anything is exposed. And if your identity is ever stolen, you're backed by up to $5 billion in insurance and 24/7 US-based fraud support. Other service charges about the same, but only cover one or two areas. Aura gives you everything: data broker removal, identity and credit monitoring, device protection, and fraud support, all in one simple app. Aura removes what's already exposed, protects what's not, and puts you back in control. Go to aura.com/remove for complete digital protection and peace of mind. That's aura.com/remove.
Let me tell you about the online cannabis company that's changing the game. Mood.com. They created an entirely line of functional gummies, 100% federally legal THC blends, discreetly delivered right to your doorstep. And here's the best part. You can get 20% off your first order at Mood.com with the promo code Ravens. Now, I've tried a bunch of their gummies myself. Each one's totally unique. The Sleepy Time gummies knock me out right away. They help me unwind fast, leave me refreshed the next morning. The Epic Euphoria gummies, they're perfect for when your day just isn't going the way you want it to go. What makes Mood special is how they pair the THC with natural herbs and adaptogens. You won't find blends like this at any local shop. They've got gummies designed for focus, relaxation, clarity, even energy, all made from cannabis grown on small, family-owned American farms. No pesticides, no shortcuts, just high-quality weed you can trust. Plus, Mood backs everything with a 100-day satisfaction guarantee. So head on over to Mood.com, check out their amazing selection, and don't forget to use the promo code Ravens at checkout to save 20% off your first order.
Attention BetMGM customers. Have a friend who loves sports as much as you do? Here's a chance for both of you to earn a $50 bonus when they sign up through BetMGM's Refer a Friend program. Just sign into your BetMGM account and click on the Refer a Friend program to send your friend a message inviting them to register a new account in the same state you use BetMGM in. Once your friend signs up and makes a deposit, they'll receive a $50 bonus. And once your friend places a bet with their bonus and the wager is settled, you'll receive a $50 bonus as well. Share the excitement and get a $50 bonus every time you refer a friend to BetMGM. Visit BetMGM.com for terms and conditions. Must be 21 years of age or older to wager. Ohio only. New and existing customer offer. All promotions are subject to qualification and eligibility requirements. Rewards issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets. Bonus bets expire in 30 days. Please gamble responsibly. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Introducing the Lowe's List for Innovation. While our aisles are filled with innovative products, we've selected our favorites just for you. Like the exclusive Whirlpool washer with industry-first 2-in-1 removable agitator. We love this washer because you can customize any load. And with other smart features to streamline your laundry routine, this product is a must-have for families. Shop the full Lowe's List of top picks at Lowe's.com. Lowe's, home to any budget, home to any possibility. U.S. only.
All right, it is another film study as we break down the offense. Little different this week as these episodes have came out on the weekend, so if you missed the defense episode, check your podcast player because that came out yesterday, or really 2 days ago, as this today we're releasing on Monday morning. That one came out Saturday morning. Ken, how you doing?
Life's good, Josh. How about you?
See, this is confusion. We got very, very confusing. We got two Kens. So all right,
I'll make it easy on you. You could just say I'm KZ.
Yeah. So let's just introduce KZ. Ken Zales, who I listen to every Thursday over on the fantasy football show over on PressBox. Ken, how you do? Ken, KZ will go with, how you doing?
I'm great. Thanks for having me, guys.
All right. We got lots to talk about as far as the offense this week, because the Ravens put up a bunch of points, 42 points.
Really nice to see them have a big day again on offense after the game at Buffalo and the game before that, where it seemed like, you know, the offense was, particularly the game at Buffalo where they had all the punts, really seemed like the offense had downshifted considerably.
Yeah, and we'll get into that in just a few moments. KZ, why don't you fill our listeners in your background and what's going on? I know you've got, I guess, one more week left of your fantasy show over on PressBox.
Yeah, we're going to do it for one more week. I've been the fantasy football and also NFL draft writer for PressBox. I guess we're going on 5 years now. Lots of history in the fantasy industry since 2003. Been all up and down the dial, I guess it is. And, you know, people, you know, follow me on Twitter and follow me on the page of PressBox. But we do a podcast, 30 minutes or so, Glenn Clark, Kyle Oppenheimer, and have a good time with it. Have a lot of fun.
All right. Cool. That's great.
All right. You ready offense. To dig how into the game? How do you feel about the upshifting the offense, getting back 42 points on a clear, cold night?
It's not really unexpected, considering the opponent, the New York Jets, and kind of talked about this a little bit when people were kind of asking me about Lamar Jackson this week. It's really difficult to prepare for Lamar Jackson on any week. But on a Thursday night game, it's almost impossible when NFL teams really don't practice. And you can watch all the tape you want and see the tendencies, but the speed of the Ravens offense, we've heard it from multiple opponents, has really caught them off guard. It's why maybe we go back and we worry a little bit about the second time somebody sees the Ravens. But it was not a surprise. And, you know, what else can you say about Lamar this year? Every time there's a situation and he's been doubted, he steps up. And the national stage is really his Monday night game and now the Thursday night game. He's just been absolutely fantastic. In the pocket, out of the pocket, whatever he does, it's just worked for him. So not a total shock that they were dominant on the offensive side of the ball against the New York Jets.
Yeah, and that certainly was great to see that happen. What I look at when I see the Ravens and teams playing them is other teams come to play the Ravens, and they are great at playing set-piece football. You know, effectively, you know, lining up all their armies appropriately, if you want to think of it that way, to most effectively fight the opponent. It goes very much true in terms of edge rushers, who the Ravens have a proud, you know, 14-week tradition now of neutralizing with the read option. But it goes for other elements of the game as well. It's just dealing with the speed of the Ravens offense, very difficult. Dealing with the additional angles and time that Lamar creates is very difficult. And dealing with having your best run defender on the side where the run is going, being taken out of the play on a regular basis, is something that there just does not seem to be another team that's figured out how to deal with it.
No, there hasn't. And it's one of those things that as this offense has evolved, you feel like there's more in the bag for the Ravens to bring out. It was really great to see that I believe they had 9 or 10 receptions from wide receivers this week. Which has been one of the things that the media has brought up is that, you know, if you stop the tight ends and you stop Mark Ingram, the Ravens really don't have anything. Well, you know, Seth Roberts got involved with 3 catches and a touchdown. Marquise Brown, you know, who came off a couple of really poor performances, whether that's by design or whether it's, you know, the kind of situation they ran into. With weather and things like that, but 4 catches and a great toe tap in the back of the end zone. But even, you know, Snead catches a ball. Boykin, who every once in a while, he, you know, it's like Groundhog Day. Every once in a while he pops out and we see his shadow and he catches a touchdown pass. But that was really positive for me watching them as they evolve, because the more you put that on tape, the more other teams are going to have to figure out, okay, well, maybe they're not just, if we take away the tight ends, they'd have some people that can burn you. And the fact that Lamar is throwing so accurately and so effectively and efficiently is really going to make this team a tough no matter who they face going forward.
Yep, couldn't agree more. Now, we're going to get into a lot of the individual performances, a lot more information on Lamar as we go through this, but I would be remiss if we didn't talk about the story of the day, which is the Terrell Suggs release yesterday was the story.
Yes.
Of course, the waiver option that the Ravens have. But then beyond that, the statement today that came out via Adam Schefter, so it's a hearsay statement, saying that he would strongly consider not reporting to any other team other than the Ravens.
You know, it's a strong statement. We'll see if it works, and nobody else will claim him. I would think that somebody would kind of play defense on this for the Ravens, against the Ravens, and kind of try to block Suggs coming back. It'll also be interesting what the Ravens want to do. I will assume, based on what we saw against San Francisco, that they would – encourage a Terrell Suggs to come, if nothing else, help them set the edge. As long as there's not something else behind him leaving and there's no hard feelings with him going to Arizona, I think it would be a great addition. I think he can definitely help the young pass rushers, if nothing else, being a extra set of eyes and watching what they do, giving some suggestions. But we'll see how it goes. I mean, it sounds like it's Ravens or bust for him, and we'll see if another NFL team steps in and says, well, you know, we'll let him sit on the sidelines. We're not letting the Ravens get him.
That really is the question at this point. Is there another team that has the resources? And it's $353,000 of cap money, so it's not free. It's something that we're willing to set that aside and maybe have him play, because he might report. I'm sure he wants the NFL career playoff sack record. And other than that, I mean, I think that they, a lot of teams would not want the Ravens to get him. I don't think they're really that concerned about what Terrell Suggs is individually, but given it's one of the Ravens' weaknesses, they would like to keep it that way. So let's take a moment to talk about Lamar Jackson, Ken, because I think, hey, that's something we talk about when we're Ravens fans. Second straight game in tough weather in that wind in Buffalo was, you know, not encouraging, a little bit concerning, perhaps in terms of the playoff weather. Very nice comeback on Thursday night.
Yeah, no, it was. Look, you know, Buffalo is a tough place to play, and they're a good football team and with a really good defense. They've played good defense all year long. So it wasn't a shock to me that they, you know, he struggled a little bit and they try to limit. I mean, there are teams that they face this year that just don't have the personnel that a Buffalo or a 49ers team has. So, you know, it was a great comeback. It showed, I think he's one of those guys that seems to get up for that national TV audience. That goes back to his college days. He was always on par on those big games. So,
yeah, certainly that's certainly a very positive quality have. Ample time and space in this game on 11 of 24 dropbacks. 46%, that's a three-second pocket, Ken, as we define it here. It's a high percentage for 2019. It works out to an expected yards number, and this is using Flacco's 2010 to 2017 standards of 144 yards with an actual of 212, plus 68, excellent for one game, particularly on only 24 dropbacks. So that's, two and change yards per throw. Better than expectation.
Yeah, I mean, what are you going to say? I mean, on top of all that, you know, to the without bringing in too many stats, he threw a touchdown pass, you know, every three completions. So that's good stuff if you can continue at that pace. And look, he's a handful right now. You know, we got all the stuff. We see the running, but the fact that he is now a weapon through the air and through the pocket. I think he's answered a lot of his critics this year where you know, he's just a runner and things like that. He can throw the football. Let him throw.
The critics that have not had their questions answered are wearing freaking earmuffs at this point. They don't want to have that question answered. Jackson in this game, 10.9 yards on his average completion in the air. That's remarkable.
Right? Yeah.
Yak on top of that. And he only had 11.4 average air yards on his incompletes. And that included that bomb to Andrews that was one of the unfortunate overthrows of the day, but a great throw. Play that was open. I'll say that. Outstanding day. He had a lot of help from his receivers in this game. He did get a good toe tap from Brown. Good catch in the end zone from Roberts, who was covered and somewhat distracted, but great game.
No, it was a great game. And you know, the fact that they were able to, you know, average almost 6 yards a carry from the running backs, you know, Lamar's a different category for me with his runs. But that just makes everything so much easier. I mean, you have to crash down on the Ravens. It's a very difficult offense right now when everything's clicking as it has most of the season to defend. You have to. What do you choose, Ken? If you're defending the Ravens, what do you choose? Do you spy on Lamar and leave everybody one on one for him?
You know, if you're asking the question, not asking it rhetorically, which I mean, you might have been headed for rhetorical.
I'm actually asking in the purposes of a conversation on Lamar. If you just did the defensive side of the ball, you're a defensive coordinator, you can't cover it all.
What Buffalo did was the most effective that I've seen so far. So what they were able to do, and it was weather related, I don't think it can be replicated without weather, was to basically use the wind as their extra safeties, much as the way the Ravens did in the game. The Ravens played a lot of cover zero, bring them up close to the line of scrimmage and be able to exchange into the appropriate gaps with those players, which, you know, shut down a lot of what Lamar's able to do in terms of finding that gap to run with. Now, most other teams, if it's a clear cold night, I hope, a clear warm night, we already know, he will have the ability to throw easily, to find the tight end, to beat your zone coverages, to take time and find angles, whatever he needs to do to pass effectively if you try and shut down the run. The read option to me has been the biggest thing in terms of being able to shred good opposing run defenses, and I've been continually amazed at how effective that's been.
It is. I mean, what did the Jets come in averaging almost 80 yards, giving up 80 yards on the ground, and Ravens go for 200 plus. And they've done this over and over again. I don't want to bring it back to a college thing, but we just saw Army Navy today. So it's like teams don't know how to defend that. You don't practice against it. You don't have the scout team to run that offense. Who's in any team that they're going to play? I mean, you look at, they're coming up on Cleveland and Pittsburgh. Who's Lamar on their scout team that they can try to replicate it? It's very difficult to deal with.
You're absolutely right. And it's like learning how to dance again. These are a bunch of, you know, 10-year-old kids or whatever they'd be trying to learn how to dance. They just don't understand the steps at this point. And they need to understand all the things about how to defend the gap, and you can put it on a whiteboard, and then all of a sudden you have to face Lamar Jackson, that additional degree of athleticism. I thought one of the interesting comments that came out this week with regard to the read option came from Greg Cosell, who said that most of the Ravens' runs, as far as he can say, are designed runs where it's just a matter of when he pulls the ball and not if on that read option. One of the really interesting.
Okay.
Yeah. It does matter, and I'll tell you why. Here's the difference. So if Lamar is just working off a read, meaning he's trying to determine if that edge defender is going after the running back or going after him, he's extraordinarily cerebral about it. He's been terrific at it. I think we can agree. But if he's instead working off the leverage foot, say, of that edge defender, which then he'd be right. He'd be right still a fair portion of the time because he still might be going after the running back, but he also could be right just because the defender's on the wrong foot and Lamar can easily then outpace him. And it may be that as well. So it may be a combination of the two, that he's both good and he's also very good at reading just the leverage.
Yeah, I mean, look, he has amazed me this year with how he reads the defense, not only on the read option, but just knowing what defenses are trying to do to him in the passing game as well. he has progressed. Look, I love the pick, and we go back into history. I love the pick. I love the player. I had no idea that he was going to be able to progress this quickly from what we saw from last year. And, you know, a change in offensive philosophy a little bit, it has a lot to do with that. His teammates trust him. But I just – you don't – sometimes the camera, if you watch it on TV, you have no idea who has the ball. And the camera, and that's all you have to – they have one job. It's like follow the ball, and they have no idea where it is. What's a defender going to do that's 5 feet away from them? It's one of those things that, you know, you go forward. I've said it before. You better have a way to replicate it. You better have seen it somewhere, because you're not going to be able to do it live learn as you go. It's not one of those situations. So it's fun right now.
It's true that if they in terms of the read option, I think defenses are going to have to find ways to outfake Lamar. I mean, obviously Lamar is making a decision about what's going on in the pocket. It may be that the read option defender needs to figure out how to move his feet differently to make Lamar misread that play. And I don't know if that's the coming in the next generation or whatnot, but to me, I don't know what I do to face, you know, to have to face this offense right now in terms of all it can do. And, you know, obviously the last 2 weeks they punted, 11 times? That just seems an outrageous amount. And then you realize they're still scoring an absurd number of points.
Right.
It is what it is. All right, let's move on a little bit. Talk about the offensive line a little bit at this point. I'll go through the scoring for each of them as I have it. I know a lot of people are interested in that, in particular in Hurst and McCary. I got to start pronouncing his name correctly each week. But we obviously had James Hurst stepping in at left tackle again. Now, can you describe your own pregame concerns or rituals regarding James Hurst playing at left tackle?
It's not a positive one. He's a better – I thought he played really well at guard last year at certain times. He has not been good in his NFL career at tackle. So there was some concern there. You know, the nice part is that they play – my concern level was a little less, because in the past, we didn't have to worry about this three-headed tight end monster. So there's always – The blocking scheme could always be over there to help. Somebody could chip them. You could have some extra help on the side. But I was really pleasantly surprised. I'm eager to hear your grade, because I thought the offensive line was really, really good, especially Hurst. I don't remember his name called, and if I don't hear somebody's name, that's usually a pretty good thing. And just from what I saw and the way they were handling him, I didn't see that they always gave him help, but I thought he held up really, really well.
Yeah, he did in this game. 57 plays, 53 blocks, gave up one penetration and 1.5 pressures for his only negative events. So 0.84 per play. That's before adjustment. With adjustment, he gets up to an A-minus grade. At a 0.87, three blocks in level two. He had one pancake, a really nice highlight block combo. And, you know, it just his game was so far above where I thought was a reasonable hope for him to return to tackle after an injured and bad second half at guard, a decent but lot of help first half at tackle. And then he'd, of course, been good. I think this is what you're really referring to in 2017 at guard when he played there for most of the year. He really had a pretty good year. If I'm James Hurst's agent after 2017, I would have said, look, just forget Hurst as a tackle. He wants to play guard, and we'll sign a contract where he can play guard, kind of thing, because that's his better position.
Right.
But, you know, the Ravens signed him to a large contract. You know, I think we'll agree.
It was a shocking contract when they did it.
Yeah, shocking contract when they did it. And when you look at it this year, there was only $1 million in savings, but they didn't have a plan to use him anywhere but tackle, clearly, because he was never really in the guard discussion. At least it does not appear he ever was. You know, there was even talk of moving to center. That was a complete load of crap. Yeah. So really, he's not a swingman. He's just a pure backup tackle. And I don't think you can have a $17 million four-year contract for a pure backup tackle.
Yeah, I don't think it works. It does help when you have a quarterback on a rookie contract. So that kind of allows you to do things like that for a little bit. But
it allows you to burn money and roll it up into cigarettes, if that's what you're talking about, because that money's all you can all push that forward. No bad move is ever justified with the cap.
It's not. It just, again, shocking contract when they did it, especially as it's turned out that, like you said, they signed him to be a swing tackle, where I kind of expected him to maybe be a guard, and he probably still is a guard at times if the situation presented itself. I think you can trust him there, but again, you gave him an A-. I'd have been happy with a B- going into the game with the history that we've seen from him at tackle. So maybe some of that is just, like I said, some of the ways that their offense is. It's not a traditional, I have to pass block, 35 times anymore. So,
Yeah, he does get more down block opportunities on those side, which is something Brown has really benefited from all season because of the read option. So he basically is allowed to let that defender in. So that's true. I'm going to move on to Bradley Bozeman, if that's all right here. On a great streak of four straight Bs going into this game, by the way, for Bozeman. So he had really turned his season around. I thought there was a chance he might be replaced when over the bye week before the Seattle game, but then he had his best game of the year at that point. He had his new best of the game of the year last night, or on Thursday night, I should say, against the Jets. So missed five blocks, no negative scores of any sort, 0.91 per play, adjusted to an A, was an A even without adjustment. Four blocks in level two, made all eight pulls, which has been something we've really been a pleasant thing from Bozeman. Had the rep coming out of school as a guy who was a quarter step too slow in the zone blocking game, which may well be true, but even with a little bit slower movement, he's been effective, and predominantly with Skura, he's avoided any of the trip issues and the other issues moving from left to right when pulling.
Yeah, he has played really, really well, as you just said. When he was coming out, I loved the pick because I loved him as a center, and I was kind of surprised that they right away pushed him to guard because he was so effective at Alabama. But he's taken to it. Big man, moves in space. When he gets to the second level, it's where the big runs seem to occur from Ingram when it happens. So he's really come into his own. And you got to remember, I mean, you don't know exactly what the learning curve is. He did not play a lot of guard in college. I don't know, he was primarily their center. And there's a learning curve. It happens. It's the speed of the game. It's a different position, and he's been a pleasant surprise at guard this year. When they drafted Powers, I thought maybe they were really unhappy with him. But he's stepped up to the challenge and played really well the other night.
Well, there were reasons to believe maybe after last year that Bozeman would have been a backup center guard anyway, and then he won this left guard role in camp. Powers, I don't know what to think at this point. Ronis Grassou and Parker Ehinger were ahead of him on the activations yesterday, and that doesn't make any sense to me. Something is wrong. Maybe he's slightly hurt. Maybe he's just like not progressed at all, but something it seems to be very wrong in terms of where Ben Powers is right now.
Well, maybe it's also some of the going back. They don't really play rookies type thing. They have to prove themselves. I know they've been forced to. I don't know.
I gotta answer that one right now. I don't really believe that it's the rookie thing when you go to the street and find two pikers like Ehinger and Grasso, and they're taking a spot that he could otherwise be filling. And I also, you know, with Grasso, maybe they're saying we don't really trust Bozeman at center is part of what they're saying, because
that could be.
Yeah, that they want to they don't want to move him is, I think, the more likely way that they're really saying it. But Grasso played a game at guard last year for the Ravens and was very bad. So I wouldn't expect that that's the case. I'm concerned developmentally about what this means for Powers, and I don't think there's any positive nuance to this that I can pick out that's the silver lining. But anyway, apologize for interrupting you.
Yeah, I mean we'll see. We'll see how he goes out. Again, good tape coming out of college seems to fit what the Ravens want to do, which is a power running game. But we'll see. Hadn't been able to get active yet.
Yeah. All right. Well, the next player, the one pretty much everybody's been wanting to hear, they're all asking me about how is McCary doing every week now. Didn't have the greatest game again. And one of his problems has been missing blocks. So he's missed 8, 7, and 6 blocks. Actually, I think it was 7, 8, and 6 blocks the last 3 weeks. This week, he also allowed half a pressure, a quarterback hit, and had a false start when he moved his feet. And the rest of the team seemed to be going, what do you mean? He didn't move. And he seemed to know that he'd moved and was already kind of like tapping his chest on the thing, which is it was what it was. But they showed him from behind. They saw him move his feet. And that's usually the death knell where you get flagged for it if the official sees it.
Yeah, center seems like the one thing. I mean, last year, Skura started off really slow, came back and kind of established himself and was good till he got hurt this year. Lot to ask of how are we pronouncing his name now? McCary,
yeah.
McCary. I think we pronounced it wrong for the first half of the year. He has to improve, but at the same time, they're going to continue to give him the help. And he has – I like him when he's gotten to the second level. He does. It seems like when they give him more to do – he struggles a little bit, which may be, kind of the inexperienced part of it. But overall, I go in to each game and it's like, just don't make the tragic mistake. Just don't whiff on somebody. Don't get Lamar or Ingram killed on a play that's coming up your back or whatever. So it's passable for me, and I think right now with the way the Ravens' offense is and the way the offensive line is playing as a whole, you can deal with a little bit of a issue from the center because they know that that's the weak link right now on the offensive line.
You know, it's surprising when you think about it that McCary has come in and stepped in for Skura at a point in the season where Skura was playing well.
Yes.
And now McCary has had a B minus C and a D in his 3 games. Actually, it's been 4 games because of the Rams. A D, B minus C, D in those 4 games. He came in the Rams game or replaced Skura in that one. It's McCary hasn't fallen off the charts. That's what I really like. Another thing I really like about McCary is that he's a very physical center. In fact, he's more physical, I'd say, than Skura. He's like halfway between Skura and Jensen. The problem is his arm length. I hate to bring that up every single show, but he had 2 more shed action verbs among the missed blocks on the score sheet here. So that's an ongoing issue, and it's something that he can't necessarily correct. We have seen some other linemen with shorter arms succeed. It's incredible to me that McCary seems to have compensated for it in college by playing tackle, pass blocking at a very high level with those arms. So I know there's things he can do, but it's a concern.
Yeah, it's going to be a concern going forward. But again, we can't have the D's, but I think if you can get them B minus to C plus, they can work with that. It just can't be the awful the D's or worse on any given Sunday.
Yeah, there's actually I'll tell you the scoring system and how it works is if it's your C, that's fine. That's an average player at the NFL level. Getting C's is absolutely fine. I know all professors say that. This is actually true in my grading system. I mean, I'd love to have some A's and B's, but all C's is fine. What will happen often is players will get a fair number of F's, and there's tremendous range in the outcome of F games. You can have an F game where you're completely off the charts, 30 points from passing, or you can have an F game where you're just, you know, a couple of points from passing, and it's a big difference. So that's where I kind of make the differentiation. But actually, you know, having a D every fourth game with never having an F with McCary would be probably okay with what he's doing right now at center. I wouldn't love it, but it'd be better than having the kind of variation that we've seen before out of players like Zuda, Gretkowski, and Shipley in terms of their previous players.
Right. I don't want to go D's in the playoffs.
I'll buy you on that. All right. Marshall Yanda, another big game here. Didn't score an A, had 3 missed blocks, 1.5 pressures, and a B-plus overall, 4 blocks in level 2. 3 highlights for Marshall in this game, which was nice. I think they were all combination blocks, but I'm not looking at them right now to know for sure. So I've got the number only in front of me.
I mean, as steady and as reliable as you can get. So when we talk about offensive line and every week, it's like it's the one guy that I never even it's funny. I don't even watch him as much as I watch the other people because I just know it's going to be pretty solid. And, you know, a B-plus is probably a down week for him. In most cases. So it's like it's like that person you just put there and say, okay, you're good. I'm going to pay attention to everybody else. He's that guy on the Ravens offensive line for me. And, you know, he'll be in that ring of honor and that probably Canton at some point. See, he's that good.
Yeah. I certainly hope it goes to Canton and earlier rather than later. We'll see how long it is. I think actually he'll benefit from playing in the PFF era where a lot of people are scoring linemen and you're not relying on, you know, 72-year-old writers
right.
to change their view of something, which doesn't happen very often. So they're, you know, arguing about the way things were. But anyway, we have less of that in terms of the movement of the all pro is much more fluid than it was in past years.
Yeah.
Orlando Brown had been on a streak of 4 straight A's. He's had now a C plus and a C, I believe, the last 2 weeks. This was a C, had 1.5 pressures allowed. Here's the big thing. Brown had 10 missed blocks in this game. And most of them, I differentiate a lot between the danger associated with some missed blocks. If you miss a block in the passing game, but the ball was out quickly, that's usually a pretty bad thing. If you whiff, but the run still goes for positive yardage, that's still probably a bad thing. But when you move to level 2 and try and find a block and you're a tackle and the plays go in the other way, that's not too bad. And a lot of his in this game were L2 and B, level 2 no block, because there just wasn't anyone for him to block on a run to the opposite side. And those I'm less concerned about. He had at least 4 of those in this game among these 10. So, not as serious a problem as would otherwise be.
No, he's been so good this year. He was a guy when you go back to draft that I was always worried about just because of the work ethic, but he's been fantastic. And I don't worry about that side of the ball, that side of the line. Normally, this week, especially for my eyes, they were on the other side watching Hurst. So some of the no blocks that you pick up on that you're more in depth of looking for, I probably didn't even see because I'm not looking at that side of the line with him and Yanda as much. But he's been so good this year that I maybe situationally the Buffalo game was a weird type game where they played a little bit differently because, like you pointed out earlier in the show, because they were playing more people near the line of scrimmage because of the way the wind was. This week, sometimes you don't have to do a whole lot if they're not running to your side with this offense.
Right.
So, like you said, so not worried about him in the least going forward.
All right, me either. So that takes us through the offensive line. We had Parker Ehinger came in for 9 snaps. I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing his name correctly. Not sure it matters, but depending on how long he's here, it might not. 9 plays, 6 blocks. He missed 3. He also had an illegal formation penalty. The Ravens were jumping up and down that he'd already reported. I haven't been able to find video which shows him actually rubbing his jersey, but But have you heard from anyone or anything at the castle, you know, around there?
I have not heard anything, but you look at the reaction from the Ravens, and they were quite certain that they had, you know, had he reported and thought he saw. I at least saw one person point at a referee during the discussion and say, "Hey, he reported. You saw him." So not too concerned about that. It seems like sometimes they just they're trying to be so innovative that maybe they just get lost in themselves a couple of times. We've seen it this year, trying to be so elaborate. We've seen the illegal formation pop up every now and then. So not too worried about that.
Yeah, me either. I think that's the way to be. I'm really impressed by the offense at another level. We come back. We have a very impressive drive chart from this game, and I'm about drive per drive numbers. And the Ravens are at a historic level in those times. Ravens, by the way, right now at 3.19 points per drive, and that excludes end of game kneel drives. But 3.19 points per drive, which is the fourth highest in NFL history, trailing the Patriots and the Chiefs and Saints of last year, but the Patriots of 2007. They were ahead. They were at 3.41 a little bit earlier this year, but still outstanding. What impressed me more about this game, you know, and we've seen this certainly in recent weeks, is the scripted plays are so outstanding. They include a bunch of play action. They include a bunch of concepts that they're force feeding the dance steps to Lamar. And I don't want to put down Lamar in any way, but he has a certain level of discomfort with certain things. And one of them is turning his back to the field. They kind of have to script a lot of play action or maybe put him through in the walkthroughs to get him to really get comfortable with it. But that's been some of the really great plays that they've had during these scripted sequences. And again, three touchdowns on three drives on Thursday.
Yeah, I mean, that's the key. It's like you get off to a quick start. And I like that they come out, you know, you saw a little bit of everything on the first drive, you know, first play goes to Hurst, and then you mix that in with a run, you know, on a keeper, and you come back with Ingram. And then all of a sudden through three plays, the defense has got to be thinking, okay, I have no idea what he's going to do. We thought he was going to run on the first play. So, you know, the fact that they were so efficient, it seemed like they were playing 7-on-7 drills for the first three drives. That's how easily they moved down the field. So getting off to a quick start with this offense is always important, because we've already seen this year how well they play keep away and how they can grind out long drives in the second half and just keep the ball away from the opposing team. And that's going to be important as the Ravens get into the playoffs and they face teams that can score quickly. You know, if they have to play a Kansas City once again, so yeah. Things like that.
You know, you make a great point there. And one of the things is you teams are live in fear of being behind the Ravens. I think the point of the Ravens can't come from behind, it hasn't really been tested this year because they've been so good early in games.
Right,
they haven't really been behind by a significant amount. But I wouldn't have the same fear of it that I would have had in past years. What I will say is that other teams have to feel like when they're down 14-3 in the first half, as often is true after, you know, two drives of ours and one of theirs, or 2-2, that they're almost like in the fourth inning against maybe a Yankees team of the last decade or so, where the bullpen has five guys lined up to come in for an inning each who all throw 100 miles an hour to shut you down. And it's the fourth inning already and you're down 14-3. You know, what do you do about that? You get behind, you can't catch up. And it's not a matter of that you can't score at all on the defense. The defense has been somewhat permeable at times this year. The problem is the offense is just going to put another 7 on the board.
Well, and you saw that, you know, when the Jets sort of, you know, got a little bit back into the game in the second half, then the Ravens just go down once again and score again. And you're like, okay, we can't stop this team, and they can do whatever they want. You look at the drives, though. I mean, they were quick for the Ravens. I mean, they're five play drives and a touchdown, six play drives and a touchdown. You know, it's just, and you give the, if you ever give this team a short field, you know, you're playing left-handed because it's almost unfair the rate that they chew up yards and they score touchdowns, how efficient they are at scoring touchdowns. And, you know, you almost forget about Justin Tucker sometimes. It used to be, you know, you had to account for two or three Justin Tucker field goals every week, and now you're lucky if you get one.
Yeah.
They've been so efficient.
Right. It's been remarkable. I mean, the other teams, I think, have to look at the Ravens' offense and say, not only do we have to keep away just to keep scoring, but there's no field long enough to stop the Ravens.
I agree with that. Can I talk about the one complaint I have on one of their drives?
Go to it.
I did not love – I was excited when they got the ball back just under 2 minutes in the first half because I wanted – Ravens have not had an opportunity. Like you said, they haven't played from behind. Mm-hmm. And they have – I was like, I want to see Lamar run the two-minute drill. And then it seems like they took the foot off the gas. He was throwing the ball so efficiently, a couple of runs, and I was like, "What are we trying to do here?" I would have, maybe it's one of those things where we're comfortably ahead of 21-7. I don't want to show anybody on film what we like to do. I was just, I maybe personally disappointed because I wanted to see Lamar run the 2 minute drill. I didn't get that opportunity. So it's just kind of a curious, hey, let's put this game out of reach type thing for me. And they're like, eh, well, we're okay going into the locker room up 14 points.
Yeah, they've shown a willingness to do a lot of things. I mean, obviously, they've gone for it on fourth down some. They had the fake punt in Miami when they were comfortably up in the opening game. They've shown plenty of willingness to go for play four down football. But I think Harbaugh kind of has a thing. First of all, it's playing against a lesser team. You should take less chances because you don't want the game to come down to one or two or three plays. You want it to be decided over the predominance of plays where you should have a big advantage. So if they're playing the Chiefs, maybe they'd have tried for a score there. But playing the Jets or playing Miami, that's not the place where you try and run the 2 minute drill. Unless you want to prove it to yourself, like you're saying, maybe they would just want to see themselves what they can do, which would be, I can't argue with that.
Yeah, way more knowledge than we have of rhyme or reason, and your point's well taken. You didn't need to do it there. You felt like you probably could have won the game with 21 points if you needed to. I know it did work out that way. You know, they scored 21 total points, but the Jets, that is. But, your point's well taken that if it was Kansas City or, someone with a more explosive offense that you can't score enough points on this particular week, maybe they're a little bit more risk-taking there. I was just I guess I had my fan hat on too much during that drive. I was like, oh, cool. Let's see the two-minute drill and let's see what Lamar can do here. So a little disappointed in that.
We saw the Saints and 49ers go off on each other.
Oh, my goodness.
And it was a great game. But how would you feel about being involved in a game like that with having the Ravens? I mean, it'd be an odd place to be to give up that many points defensively.
It would be, but I have so much confidence on the offensive side of the ball. I would just want to hope that the Ravens had the ball last. That would be the only thing, kind of that's, I'm not scared of any type of game with this team right now. It'll be interesting when they showed their grit against San Francisco
and they did have the ball last.
Buffalo. And proved that they could win in different situations, different weather situations against better. It amazes me. It still goes back. You think go back 6 weeks and everybody's saying, oh, the Ravens are doing well, but who have they played? And then you look at the last 6 weeks and it's like, who haven't they played? I mean, they've played everybody. If you believe in these power rankings, they've played, six of the top 10 teams in the NFL and have gone 6-0, which is unreal. And they've blown most of them out. So
you'd have to be a special kind of bias to try and find
after the Buffalo game, because I'll be quite honest, that was the one game that really scared me. I don't have any fear of what type of game, I prefer the Rams type situation versus the game we saw between San Francisco and New Orleans. But I don't think you would be fearful of that.
I think the Rams and the Texans game obviously were good ones. Why don't we go to skill position players here? I want to make sure we keep the show kind of on track here. But talk about a player, and then I'll take a player in terms of some of the offense you just want to discuss. Did something you like? Play you like? Whatever you'd like to talk about, Ken. And we'll each kind of react to each other.
You know, the person I want to talk about is Miles Boykin. Believe it or not, because. And it's not about the touchdown catch, and it's always nice to see that. His downfield blocking
outstanding
is so good for a rookie to come into this league and understand how to do that and be selfless to a degree and say, okay, I know I may get one or two targets, but I'm really important. I just love how physical and aggressive he is on blocking downfield, and I couldn't be more impressed with him in that situation. And he's been all year long, and he can sit. I mean, he's 20 yards downfield blocking.
Yeah, last night we had Coach Evans on the show, and he had some no block, no rock T-shirts made up, which is a motto he preaches to his high school team. Boykin is doing exactly the right things for himself to earn himself more playing time with his blocking. Obviously, Roberts has been a fine blocker, too. But Boykin downfield, he just has a sense of position relative to the runner. It's almost like you're watching Marshall Yanda pivot through the hole on a power run to see him kind of keep himself consistently between the thing. He also has an advantage of he's enormous, and the yes. cornerbacks he's blocking, you know, he outweighs by 40 pounds. So it's a nice situation for Miles, and he's definitely doing what he needs to earn more time. I'll pick a player now. I'm going to pick Patrick Ricard. Great day blocking, some off-target throws. I think they really want to get Ricard back in the receiving game. I do think he's a player that can really help them. And I've mentioned on the show before, Ovi Mahaley, 2006, came from nowhere to have a big receiving year with one catch at Tennessee that really started the whole wave. So I still think that Ricard is part of their plans going forward to have a bigger receiving role because it's very complimentary.
Yeah, he's a fascinating case study in the NFL because we don't have those two-way players, and he does everything really, really well. And he could catch the ball. He was just like you said, they were off target throws towards him. But I so enjoy him, and he's again one of those guys. When they put him in, you think it's going to be a run because of his size, and they have used him in so many ingenious ways this year that it's one of those pieces that I'm glad you took him after I took Boykin, because they're two guys that are really unheralded as far as the splash plays, but they're so important to this offense.
All right, your turn. Who do you want?
My turn. I'm going to take Gus Edwards.
Okay.
The reason I'm going to take Gus Edwards is because he averaged, I think, over 6 yards a carry this week. He seems like he's gotten a nice niche as far as he gives not only Ingram a break, but he's the closer in the fourth quarter when they need those tough yards and they need to grind them out. And to go from where he finished the season last year, again, unselfless, really doing what's best for the team. But he's a really good, he runs hard on every carry. And, you know, when you have a change and you don't lose anything when your starting running back goes out of the game for whatever reason, that's a really important piece to have. And he continually, gets those tough yards, runs hard. And if he can average 6 yards a carry, fantastic.
Well, there's virtually been no change in Gus Edwards from 18 to 19. I mean, he's almost the same player. He's a big back. They use him in similar situations. Obviously, they do use him in this closer role you're talking about. It's great to get him in there for a play when you're not sure if you want a downhill run or a read option. So it's a good opportunity for that. But 2018, he had 137 carries for 5.2 per carry and 2 touchdowns. 2019, he's got 100 carries for 515 yards, 5.2 per carry and 2 touchdowns. There's been no backup, and I agree with you. It's been very nice to see that there doesn't seem to be an animosity or any kind of problem that goes with it. He's gonna have some good amount of tread on the tires when he comes up for free agency. When that is, he certainly is building a terrific resume.
Yeah, absolutely. Your turn.
All right, my turn. So who do I want to talk? I'll talk a little bit about Seth Roberts because he certainly had a huge game. He had been getting a couple of catches in the previous weeks where he seemed to get absolutely smacked as he caught the ball a couple of times. And they were short yardage, first downs, because a lot of Roberts' throws seem to be first downs. But he was really getting killed on the other end. It's nice to see him get a few balls downfield, a little bit of open space to run with after the catch. And really make some things happen. So he's been certainly a very good blocker for the Ravens, done that well, very complimentary player. Not a guy I thought all that highly of when the Ravens got him, a slot guy. And the last thing the Ravens needed was another slot pony, frankly, with who they had. And then to have him basically be an outside receiver in for most of his usage here has been very good.
Yeah, he's been more and more involved as the season has gone on as a pass catcher. The concentration on the touchdown catch is fantastic. But it seems like even when he was at Oakland, he was a big play guy for Oakland. He was that downfield threat for them. So it is a part of his game that they can utilize a little bit more. And again, one of those things that I think, when teams start to try to take away something else, it's another weapon that they have, as he's been, really good at getting behind the defense, last couple weeks. So it's good to see.
All right. All right. We've had a chance on a few skill position players. Let's move on now. Talk a little bit about the Ravens position and where they are right now. Obviously, they're going to be favored the rest of the way to Miami. Every game that they continue to win, they have an opportunity to win themselves an extra week off this next week in Cleveland. I think they go into Cleveland on fire, basically, to win this game. We'll see how the Browns show up for it. The Browns are a team, obviously, I guess they're playing for their playoff lives right now. Is that technically true, or are they actually out of it?
They're still hanging on by a thread.
Okay, so they're 6-7. They might win Sunday. They might lose Sunday. If they lose Sunday, they're in a lot of trouble.
I think if they lose Sunday, they're out, depending on what else happens. But yeah, it's the Ravens. They're going to be up for that. It seems like they're always up for that.
All right. And we talked a little bit with the coach about who you would sit in that final game, assuming they win. Where are you on that?
If the game means nothing, it's going to be the fourth preseason game for me. I'm not any piece that I think is a starter. I'm not risking, especially if the game means something for Pittsburgh. You could have a really desperate team coming in to play their hardest on every single snap. So Ravens win next week. I'll take my chances. This team has played hard the entire year. I'm sitting everybody. I mean, maybe it's a Justice Hill week for me. Okay. But no, I'm not. I don't believe in they'll have a first round bye, so that means they'll have 3 weeks off. It's okay. It's okay.
Lots of value in that. They are a dinged up team, as every team is this time of year. But certainly they could do that. They also have some young talent that hasn't gotten a shot. Jaleel Scott could be activated.
Right.
Ben Powers, I don't see a reason not to activate him for that game. Let's put it that way. Maybe there's an injury concern that I'm not aware of, but I wouldn't see a reason. Iman Marshall, I'd like to see him get some time at cornerback. I'd like to see Anthony Averett get back on the field just in case we need him in the postseason. There's a fair number of players that they really would like to see. Hey, what can they do? Maybe even get Chris Board back in there to really see if he can play some inside linebacker for this team again. So they've got certainly a lot of players, and they'll have some players they really want to sit out, like Yanda, probably Ronnie Stanley. I would think they're going to want to sit out. So there'll be some questions certainly beyond that. I usually go 3-2-1 from here, like hockey stars for the MVP. Do you want to do that with me, or do you want to have your own list, or what would you like to do?
We can, you know, we can do that. You can give yours. I can give mine.
All right.
If you like.
I'll start with my number three. You go ahead with your number three after me then. So my number three is Mark Ingram. Another good game running and receiving. Happy to see him dance his way into the end zone a couple times, once as a runner, once as a receiver.
Mine was Marquise Brown. I thought he showed some toughness and taking a couple of pretty good smacks across the middle, and then the concentration to get his feet down on that touchdown pass, touchdown grab was just fantastic. So he's a very important part if he can stay healthy.
Yeah, great choice. My number two, I'm going to cheat a little bit and give a split award to Hurst and Bozeman, who were the two best offensive linemen. It wouldn't be fair to not include Bozeman when he probably outplayed Hurst by a little bit, but Hurst stepping in for Stanley at the more important position, obviously absolutely critical anytime he has to do that.
My number two was Mark Andrews. There was some question whether he was even going to be active this week. You know, maybe because it was the more so because it was the short week, but he's obviously the knee injury or whatever it was not serious. He's still the top weapon, top target for Lamar Jackson. And, you know, if I'm sure Lamar would tell you he wants that one throwback, but right. He has a knack of making the tough catches on third down when you need to keep the chains moving. And, you know, he has a way of getting behind the defense as well. So he's my number two.
Great choice. I love that fourth down conversion, too, where all of a sudden they hook up on a 36-yard play. It's just a dagger. Yes. I imagine we have the same number one. I'm with Lamar Jackson. We talked about him considerably so far. I don't think there's any need to add. But the comeback and to prove he could play in nice, cold, normal January Baltimore conditions, very exciting.
Yeah, I mean, there's no, you know, it's like the guy who scores the hat trick. There's no mystery to this. It's Lamar Jackson, the five touchdowns, the breaking the record for rushing yards. The whole night was a celebration for him.
All right, Josh, how you doing? What do we have in the mailbag here?
All right, well, we have about 100 questions about Terrell Suggs and his chances coming back to Baltimore. So we're going to skip all those. Everyone can check out the special Suggs episode that came out yesterday to have all of those questions and a whole lot more answered. But we are going to get to this. Do either of you have a problem with Lamar staying in there for that first drive in the fourth quarter?
Yeah. You can go ahead first, Ken.
Yeah, I don't have a huge problem with it. I mean, he's your starting quarterback. I get it. If they wanted to take him out, I wouldn't have had a problem with it that way either. I think it was one more drive and it was fine. I really don't. I didn't at the time. I know there was a lot of discussion on social media about it. Why is he still in the game? Blah, blah, blah. I was like, he's your starting quarterback. I mean, we see this all the time. I mean, people don't come out of games. They want to play. Lamar's in Harb's ear every second, you know, begging for more, more, more. So I didn't really have a big problem with it.
All right. I didn't like it, but hey, what are you going to do? We're going to not like it more that first time he gets hurt. You saw Griffin come in, go down hard on his back on the sideline on one of the first plays, might have been the first play where he ran and went down hard. And I'm thinking, well, nobody's immune, of course. But, you know, if we have two players here, we want to be taking that chance with Lamar. Of course, if it was Lamar, he'd probably shot by him for going to 20 or something. So
right. Yeah.
All right. Have either of you noticed improvements on how Lamar is protecting himself or the team doing a better job of keeping him safe, especially late in those games?
Certainly he's getting sacked less than he was early in the year. The first 5 weeks of the year, I believe he had 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5 sacks each time. So his sacks have gone way down. The impact of those sacks has been lower. I still feel like there have been a couple times where he's held the ball too long. But generally speaking, I think he's doing some better things to protect himself. And the offensive line is gelled and is probably playing a little better right now than they have at any point this season.
Yeah, I thought we saw the hardest hit he'd taken all year in this week's game. And I think he would tell you he was probably stunned by it. He thought he had gotten around, but you know, a guy came across the middle and really gave him a nice jolt, but he popped up and all that. I think he's very, very good at protecting himself. He seems to have the right, whether it's stepping away or diving under, he seems very in tune that to avoid the big hit. I can't name five big hits he's taken this year at any point, whether it's in the pocket or outside the pocket. So not too concerned.
Two last week against Buffalo had me concerned. The high-low hit and the hit that he took in the pocket that actually caused the quad bruise was a mid-thigh hit towards the left side of the pocket. But, I think he's been exceptional at protecting himself. And honestly, I've seen Flacco take many more bigger hits in the pocket and get up from them. So happy to see it.
Well, see, I just think Lamar's going to get hurt from standing on the sideline because he's not one of these guys that goes and sits on the bench. He's right there on the edge and picking guys up when they get knocked over.
Like cameraman and whatnot.
Exactly. All right, but we can't let KC go without giving him a chance to talk about John Harbaugh and the HWO and his frustration for John Harbaugh.
So let me say this. I'm not a Harbaugh guy. I've never been a Harbaugh guy. It's fine. It's just one of those things. I think that he is not the best coach as far as clock, as far as handling timeouts, as far as handling challenges. I've been critical of him with that. I also feel that he is loyal to a fault as far as allowing his offensive and defensive coaches to coach, which some would say is a good thing. And it is on one hand, but on the other, I would like the head coach every once in a while to step in and say, hey, you know, we're running the ball at 8 yards a clip. Can we continue running the ball? At 8 yards a clip, we shouldn't have 9 rushes. This year, he's been a lot better. No doubt about that. I still think he's challenged as far as clock and time go. But his player, and I've always said this, his players play hard for him. So it's hard, you know, what are you going to do? I think that he should send half his paycheck all the time to Lamar Jackson, because without Lamar, I don't know if he'd be here.
All right.
That's just mine.
I know, kid. I know. But I've got to react to it at least a little bit. Harbaugh has advanced so far in terms of the way he's embraced analytics this year. And it's not just what people are saying. I was all over him for it, in particular for the Christmas game at Pittsburgh, where they didn't really take the time to run down the clock before they scored.
Yes.
And it's ridiculous. You understand completely going up the field exactly what's going on. You literally could have ordered into the huddle that if Juszczyk breaks through on 3rd and 1, he's not scoring, he's kneeling at the 1 yard line. Wouldn't have been a hard thing to get into the play. Couldn't do that. There's been other things I've been critical of him on in terms of not exactly understanding the rules to be able to challenge things, particularly a Jets move where they lost 11 yards on a blocked field goal that should have been moved back to the spot of the kick. And for some reason, nobody on their staff convinced him to challenge it. Anyway, there have been various things over the years that I don't think have gone well. But Harbaugh has the perfect set of coordinators to give the complete reins to this year. It's just luck of circumstances. But what he's also done is given the reins to his analytics guys to tell him much more of the time which way to go. He obviously has put more trust in them so that the headset elf who's talking to him is saying, you know, this will improve our chances to win the game slightly if we go for it on this 4th down here. He's taking that advice and he's moving with it.
Like I said before, I think he's done a much better job this year. It's probably for me the most impressed I've been with him this year. He still peeks his head up every once in a while to remind me that he's the Harbaugh that I've been critical of. You know, the analytics, I'm an old man. I'm not where everybody else is with the analytics. I kind of joked this week after Tucker missed the extra point, I was like, great, we're going to chase that 1 point for the rest of the game now. And then he got the 2-point conversion and it's over. So I just, there are times when the analytics on fourth down decisions, I'm all about it. If it tells you to go for it, go for it. He's been really good at that. I'm still not there personally with the 2-point conversions. The Kansas City thing still boggles my mind. Going back to that game early on, how you had the silence of the crowd and we just let them back in it. But that's me being too slow on the analytics and still being a little bit more of a traditionalist. But at the end of the day, look, I'm a high school coach as well. If your team plays hard for you and they respect you, that goes a long way. And this team obviously plays hard. They're having a lot of fun with it. I think Harbaugh has grown as a head coach and is allowing the players to have their fun a little bit more. You know, to allow big personalities to be part of the locker room. That was a challenge for him earlier in his career. So, again, I'll still be critical when there are things that, challenges and when the coach says, I'm never going to challenge pass interference again. And the next game he challenges a pass interference call. It drives me nuts. It's like, you just told me that you're not going to do it. So
yeah. I don't think you gave a warranty with that, Ken, but I understand.
I appreciate what he's done this season and how he's allowed. Ooh, what happened there? How he's allowed his young, hotshot quarterback to kind of grow and have some fun with him.
All right. Well, Casey, I want everyone to give you a follow on Twitter at Fans Fantasy. If you still care about fantasy football this week, it's because you're in the championship. So get your questions over to Ken and check out PressBoxOnline.com and Ken's show over there. Ken, thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me, guys. I enjoyed it.
I appreciate it, Ken.
All right. And then our own Ken McCusick, FilmStudyBaltimore.com. As this is coming out on Monday morning, I imagine that the offensive breakdown and defensive breakdowns are both now up on the site.
They should both be now up on the site. Given our recording time, I don't know that for a fact, but I am intending that to be the case. And you should also be able to listen to the Terrell Suggs podcast with a little bit more detail on his 2019 season to date and how we think he may be able to fit in with the 2019 Ravens.
All right. Hey, does the extra time that we have this week, that will help get Suggs in and get him prepared, right?
Excited about it. Yeah. I don't know how much time Suggs really needs to prepare at this point. Suggs is a very crafty, longtime NFL veteran. But yeah, if there's anything he needs to adapt to that's new about Martindale's defense from last year, sure.
All right, guys. Well, we will talk soon.
Birdland Sports. For fans, by fans. Find more great shows like this at birdlandsports.com.
Introducing the Lowe's List for Innovation. While our aisles are filled with innovative products, we've selected our favorites just for you. Like the exclusive Whirlpool washer with industry-first 2-in-1 removable agitator. We love this washer because you can customize any load. And with other smart features to streamline your laundry routine, this product is a must-have for families. Shop the full Lowe's list of top picks at Lowe's.com. Lowe's, home to any budget, home to any possibility. U.S. only.